Very good afternoon. We are now going to begin the next panel. We'll be hearing from the MPs, and they'll be giving us their opinion on whether we require a change in anti-HIV discrimination legislation. We're just waiting for one of the MPs. Eloisa Bologna, however, will not be with us. She was the Green Party. But we will begin with Pedro Silverio Marx, who will be making a few recommendations, the recommendations he believes he should make vis-a-vis the amendment of the law. Thank you very much. Without further ado then, we're talking. The mic is on. Well, the red light is on, so I presume it's on, says the speaker. The legal framework, well, I still don't have the PowerPoint up, says the speaker. But the legal framework is contained in Article 13 of the Constitution of the Portuguese Republic, which enshrines the principle of equality before the law. We're having a few technical hitches here, says the speaker. I hope this is not discrimination in veiled form. All citizens are equal before the law, says Article 13 of the Constitution. However, disability or health are not considered to be among the reasons listed as being prohibited as forms of discrimination. But in the spirit and the letter of the law and in international treaties, conventions, declarations on these matters, it's all very clear. Discrimination for health reasons is illegal, goes against people's rights, is a form of discrimination, and Portugal is a signatory of these texts. It signed up to the first UN declaration, I believe in 2000, I can't remember, but it has signed up to all of these texts. Specific legislation now on discrimination that lists the different types of discrimination. Law 46 dating back to 2006, which focused on discrimination based on mental or physical disability. The parliamentary health group at the time, other parliamentary groups as well, allowed us to include a sub-paragraph which extended the law to people with aggravated health risk. That was the formulation used at the time. I think we need to revise that. Up until now, however, there was no evidence that would allow us to criticize the existing legislation and propose alternative solutions. Now I think it is possible. We do have the evidence base. And given the information available to us via the National Rehabilitation Institute that compiles all the information on cases investigated. So the information, as I was saying, is not great in quantity. I think around 1,400 cases of discrimination, and the National Rehabilitation Institute only reported 136 in 2012, I believe, says the speaker. That's the last report we have. Well, it's the data up on the screen. It's 131. I stand corrected, says the speaker, not 136. We get around 26 cases per year at the center. It's a smaller percentage. HIV-related cases are 400 and something, but it is a low number. We don't have much information on what is happening in the country. The main shortcomings in the law when we look at all this data have to do with the fact that people with aggravated health risk, that expression reinforces the stigmatization of these people. So we propose something different. I'll show you that in a while. But the typification of the cases in the law doesn't also consider family and social environments. There are specific education, insurance, bank loan, housing elements listed. But when it comes to social exclusion and family exclusion, so exclusion from social relations, that unfortunately has not been provided for in law. And so we need to take those into account. There is no penalty to apply to public services that do not respect their duty to report to the National Rehabilitation Institute. There are no independent mechanisms to supervise enforcement of the law, including the structure that receives complaints of discrimination. Regulatory bodies, with very few exceptions, do not supervise the cases underway. Most of the procedures are looked at internally. That's in the hospitals, in the companies, in the different institutions, but the complainant is not heard. I'm not a legal expert, but that doesn't seem right to me. And very often, the reaction is that there might be proceedings lodged for defamation. If someone complains that something has happened, and this goes to the minister and to the National Rehabilitation Institute, who checks how things are going? The law doesn't say. There are no guidelines on uniform criteria in assessing the complaints. If we lodge a complaint with the police, they say, "Oh no, it's too difficult to deal with. Try and find a way around it, solve the problem some other way." If we go to the public prosecution service, they say it's not a crime, it's an administrative offense, that's not something we deal with, and there are no clear guidelines as to who should receive these complaints and deal with them, in addition to those bodies where the discriminatory act has taken place. On the other hand, there is not enough dissemination on a continuous basis of the equality rights that these target groups have. It may seem silly, but the Rehabilitation Institute published some pamphlets on the law, which they handed out two by two because they can't afford to print any more leaflets. I understand there are other restrictions they have to deal with, but this is far too important an issue to be conditioned by publication costs. This has to be sufficiently important to make public and disseminate. There must be someone who can help publish these leaflets, as is the case in the public, in the population at large. People with HIV have a lack of information on the rights they have and the rights to defense, to their own defense. So they complain very little. People don't complain because they don't actually know they have a right to anything. I talked earlier about the results of the awareness study. Most people think that the company has the right to test its workers. This is just pure ignorance. They don't know what their rights are. The National Rehabilitation Institute report doesn't have any useful content. Complaints are based on discrimination, but they don't identify the causes of the discrimination. They just basically list the articles in the law under which the complaint falls, but there's no description of what has actually happened. People in the law may know what it means, but someone who doesn't know the law won't understand a word. And so if you don't know what the causes are, how can you understand the decisions? And what the decisions mean. If someone tells you some have been suspended or filed, what, why, based on what reasoning? Maybe they were filed because there was no evidence backing the complaint. Was it that it was not true? Was it that a solution was found? To file something doesn't actually explain why it's been done. No reference made to any penalties, and we don't know what the content of the compulsory or binding opinions of the National Rehabilitation Institute is. Now, the law says that these opinions by the National Rehabilitation Institute are compulsory, but I've never seen one. I don't think there's enough transparency in all of this. So the National Rehabilitation Institute says this is what we have, A, B, C, D, E, F. That tells you what subparagraph A, D, E, F says. They tell you the percentages, those that have been followed up on, others that have been filed away. I certainly can't draw many conclusions from this very sparse data, but this is what we get. So, in my modest opinion, what needs to be looked at? Well, the designation or the title of the law. I don't think we should talk about aggravated health risk. I think it should say discrimination based on the health status. Article 4 needs to be looked at. 1, 7, and 15 need to be looked at again. Look at the definition of disability. We need to include in subparagraph A of Article 3, when it talks about the object of less favorable treatment, the expression be threatened, insulted due to physical, mental disability, or health status. In subparagraphs A, H, I, and J in Article 4, we need to include a reference to discrimination in family or social environment and update the information on the body responsible under Article 8, subparagraph 1, which refers to the non-existent National Board for Rehabilitation and Integration of People with Disabilities. This no longer exists, so we need to revise this. We need to include the term discrimination in the current INR. Clarify Article 8, subparagraphs 2 and 3. And the annual report has to include data on complaints on discrimination, the causes, etc. That's my contribution on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that contribution from Pedro Marques. I'd like to welcome Isabel Neto, who is now with us, and we're going to begin the discussion in the order of the parliamentary groups. Ricardo Batista Leite, who is the coordinator for the Parliamentary Committee on the HIV/AIDS issue. Now, the question is, what is the purpose of this law, and what role do MPs play in drawing up these laws to deal with these various issues which have been raised? Thank you very much, Bernardo, and thank you for being here for this discussion, or this public service, if you like. Thank you, Pedro Silveira Marques, who spoke more in Parliament today than many MPs speak throughout a legislative period. So it's great to have had you here with us today. Now, the role of the lawmaker is to promulgate laws and then to oversee their implementation, but we'll look at that a little bit better. Now, the stigma and fighting stigma can be a catalyst for fighting on other fronts when it comes to the fight against HIV, because we can't fight the stigma, we can't fight new infections linked to HIV. If we can't fight the stigma, we can't fight the deaths associated with HIV. In addition to my role here, I'm a doctor, and when I finished my training as a doctor, I was extremely ignorant. When I moved into my specialism, which was infectiology, and I had my first appointment, which was with a transgender patient, my first experience, and I remember the numbers of prejudices which I had when I was dealing with that person. It shows that it shows what has been said so much today about ignorance is not ignorance in books. It goes much more deep than that. It involves understanding how to be citizens, how to live in society. And so I can talk about this from my own experience. And so this is why I've spoken so much since of citizenship and understanding. It's only through this major change in society, and we've already had one heard one speaker said that this won't happen in his time, but I think it will, because it's only through that change that stigma will change, and this will enable us to enact laws. Generally speaking, the laws we have are quite wide-ranging, but all too often they're ineffective, as we know. When it comes to HIV AIDS, have a cumulative problem with the illness. You see a lot of women infected, which goes hand in hand with gender discrimination. You have many homosexuals. So that goes hand in hand with other types of stigma or discrimination against them. The same with immigrants, with drug users, and so on and so forth. And so this type of discrimination has a number of different levels, which makes the phenomenon even more serious. Francisco Jorge talked about a very important subject, the way in which we have dealt with the infection over recent years. He said that looking back, perhaps it was a mistake to deal with this infection in a very limited and vertical way. Perhaps this has increased the stigma, because perhaps we should have taken a wider view of the whole issue, included it with other infectious diseases and sexually transmitted diseases. With the law 46/2006, which deals with discriminatory action and offences, and he made a number of recommendations. I think after this discussion, listening to all the parliamentary groups, and after today, we have to understand that we have to do something. We have to do something in Parliament. That's my personal opinion. But also, we have to do something with respect to civil society and when we listen to Antonio Diniz, it's quite clear that the government understands that. But on the basis of oversight, which is the job of this parliament, we introduce laws, but then we have to understand how well or not they work. I agree with the points which you raise. In fact, your organisation actually has to deal with discrimination, and so firstly, that's the first issue that we have to focus on, and we can generate consensus around that, I am sure. Then, compulsory information on the basis of the INR, it provides very little information, and it's not very useful. In fact, the reports which it produces are to complement the law, so we can improve our procedures, and we can improve as legislators the effects of the laws which we're introducing. We can't live in a vacuum as MPs, and when it comes to HIV, we've progressed over the last 30 years. Also, we have to make people understand what's happening with each of the complaints which are presented. That is a way of raising awareness in society that people's action of submitting a complaint does set in chain a series of procedures. Also, a law which prevents discrimination owing to disability or a serious decline in health was in fact counterproductive, as it turns out. So we need to once again look at this issue from a legislative point of view. When we changed the type of terminology that was used, when we included things like threat and insult owing to physical and mental disabilities and a decline in health, I think that when we saw we looked at the role of stigma and discrimination in society and within the family, and I focus in particular on discrimination within the family, the current law refers to the reintegration of people with disabilities. Unfortunately, our own parliament has been very lax in implementing this law. I think that the idea of involving family, work, places and other things in trying to help in these results enables us to identify what types of discrimination is actually at question here. When we analyze any question or any complaint which is submitted to us about people's activities, just one proposal which raises doubts, which is create a punishment regime for people who don't live up to their obligations. I'm not sure about that, but I think that we can discuss that here. But Marcus also proposes full dissemination of the law. Today we know that the Labour platform, with the together with the Directorate General for Health, is providing specific training for judges on these issues, and that I think is something very important. This was backed up by Alice from the ILO, and this heads for the worst cases of discrimination, such as the one which I mentioned, the cook who was fired because he was seropositive. Now, we've had people from abroad, from the ILO, from GNP Plus, and they've actually said that we've been in the forefront here in Portugal in anti-discrimination laws, but we have to make sure that they are fully implemented in the field so that everybody involved in the chain and in the flow of in which discrimination takes place have a proper training. And this study helps us to understand a little bit more where we can act from a training and education viewpoint. And that begins with fighting illiteracy, which is essential for training people for citizenship. And then this can enable us to fight stigmatization, and we can fight disease, which itself will fight the deaths, which are related thereto. Right. Elsa Paes took a lot of notes here, I noted, when Ricardo Baptista Leite, the name of the National Institute, the INR, he talked about the punishment regime, and I know you have some doubts about that. What do you think of this law? What do you think about the proposals which have been actually put on the table here for changing this law? Thank you very much, Bernard Ferral. Good afternoon to everybody. Before I answer the questions which you've asked of me, I would like to highlight the importance of such a conference as this, because it calls our attention to the need to promote a an attitude which raises people's responsibility, anti-discrimination, which are cornerstones for a country which is governed by rule of law, which is an inclusive society. Now, a lot has been said already today, suggesting that we've made a lot of advances here in Portugal with regard to the fight against HIV, AIDS, and HIV and AIDS. I've learned a lot here today, and the promotion of human rights, which I have to link to the issue of stigma. Stigma and human rights are linked. You can't fight stigma and stereotypes if we don't promote human rights, and so those two issues and citizenship education are closely linked. I would like to highlight this progress which has been made, but I have to underline the long way we still have to go, not only in perfecting our laws, although existing laws do have their merits, we have to admit, with certain imperfections, as any law will have, given the fact that the world moves on, and laws after a while time, after a certain amount of time, don't match the reality. Nevertheless, we very often discover that a law very often turns out to be very applicable to another situation. This law was aimed at disabilities, in fact, originally, but now it's been linked to issues linked to HIV/AIDS. So I think that the law, I don't think that laws do everything. Laws do so much, but although they're important, they are never enough to change a reality. So as a result, they have to be supervised, they have to be assessed, and they have to be rethought. So the Portuguese Parliament is a place where such a supervision, such assessment of laws is carried out, so that significant improvements can be made. Perhaps you need to explain what assessment is when it comes to this particular law. I don't have in-depth studies on this specific law, so any readings that have been made of the law, I back them up. But I think we need to monitor issues much more closely, perhaps in the respective commission where the questions can be gone into in more depth. But there is great ignorance of the law, or of laws, not only on the part of professionals, whether it's in health or in education, at work, but also on the part of those who have HIV, for example. Not everybody knows their rights, and society doesn't know. So though we have a citizenship deficit in knowledge of the law, in implementation of the law, and we have an attitude in which fear and lack of knowledge tends to bring a lot of weight to bear, and we tend to divide people between those who are people and those who don't see their rights applied and observed. When we act in this way, we are dividing society into two groups, and that division is one that goes against the principle of protecting human rights, and in this respect, promoting education for citizenship, promoting an attitude which encourages the training of professionals an attitude which encourages information on the rights for people who at any given time are affected by a problem such as this is essential. I also have to raise another point. Article 13 of the Constitution, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of a number of parameters, and to that you can always add state of health. In fact, the Socialist Party would be open when such a issue is discussed, we would be open to a change there. But there is a famous phrase which exists in all laws which prevent discrimination. The only thing that's missing is now all we have to do is stop discriminating. Now, I'm perhaps caricaturing the situation. We do have to improve laws. Nevertheless, with the laws which we already have, we could discriminate less. We could fight discrimination as it exists much better. It's not the lack of laws that prevents us from reducing our discriminatory action. It's, in fact, other issues. And in this rather articulated fight, it's in this situation or in on this focus which we have to concentrate. Well, if it's not the problem of laws, then perhaps members of parliament can help fight discrimination. Well, meetings like this are important. We're on the parliamentary television channel, and so this discussion is being disseminated to thousands of people. People are listening to us, and they at least will learn about the problem. They can find more information. Disseminating information, you can reduce stigmas. I've been in many situations in which stigma has been raised in a particular strong way. And what I've gradually understood is that the more we talk about things, the greater we raise people's understanding of them. We have a collective awareness of that we have to develop a non-discriminatory attitude and an inclusive attitude. So moments such as this are very important for the Portuguese Parliament. I praise Ricardo Batista Lei, my colleague, as coordinator for the panel on HIV AIDS related issues for organizing this meeting, because it's through this kind of thing that things can change. MPs, of course, our mission to oversee the law is a mission which we have to comply with, and this is what we're doing here because we're learning more, and this will lead us to change the law where necessary. In Portugal, we do have mechanisms to punish various types of discrimination. We have a mechanism to punish discrimination based on ethnic origin. We have CIT and ACT, which is a anti-discrimination mechanism. CIT is for discrimination at work based on gender. And we have this law whose implementation and monitoring is being carried out by the INR. I think that we, on the basis of this law, we could create a punishment mechanism which would be more effective. It would be strengthen its enforcement rather more than is actually included within the law. Now, we do have to move on to other speakers, so if you could round off. Just finally then, the Ombudsman is a mechanism which defends human rights to promote the promotion of human rights. And so that is a mechanism in which all citizens can participate with regard to any type of discrimination. I don't know whether all of these mechanisms are being properly used, and I would raise this question by all of us and by the people specifically who are themselves targets of discrimination, just to end this dissemination of access to rights, is an extremely important task. And the coordination group for HIV/AIDS, and all MPs, all state bodies, all NGOs, should be involved in disseminating the need to inform people about their rights and the mechanisms which already exist in Portugal to submit a complaint when one is being discriminated against.
Thank you very much, Elsa Paes. I'm sorry I had to interrupt, but we still have three MPs who need to speak. Isabel Galvis and Neto now. As Elsa Paes was saying, what is important is that we talk about these matters. My question is, now that we're at this point in time, is it more important to perfect the law, or is it more important to combat existing problems such as the ones identified by the study, i.e. that some interviewees can't even get basic dentistry done, don't have access to basic family planning mechanisms, etc., etc. Thank you very much. Good afternoon to everybody. My apologies for having been a little late. Unfortunately, my public life delayed me. I had urgent matters to attend to in my palliative care department. I would like to thank the organizers, congratulate them on the fact that we're all gathered here today. This is a very positive gathering, a very positive event. It's one of the contributions that we can make, and the Parliament has a contribution to make as well. Based on what we've just heard from Bernardo, we need to open our Parliament to citizenship causes, and citizenship causes are politics, the politics of every day. We don't include certain concerns, health-based concerns, in politics. And if you would allow me, I believe, often find it difficult to deal with certain aspects of citizenship, i.e., very often we don't talk enough about them because the media don't consider these affairs political affairs. Things that have to do with the well-being of the Portuguese and their health, of course, are political matters. And so we should be disseminating this information, informing people, as we have heard here today. These are not things that should be on the periphery, be considered minor, but rather things that are central. Maybe in a more provocative tone, we don't want these issues not to be in the news. They need to be at the forefront of the news agenda because they have a direct impact on the well-being of the Portuguese. Now, as a parliament, ours is a parallel path. We need to make sure that we have reasonable laws. It looks like the 2006 law is not a badly finished product. I think it is cross-cutting in nature. I think, thankfully, it is possible for us to reach a consensus in our parliament so that some aspects of the law might be improved on, but as has already been said by my colleagues, laws don't change everything. And when we draw up laws, we need to be realistic. We need to understand what our final aim is. Somebody has already said that perhaps results won't come about in this lifetime, but we need to be aware that a lot has already been achieved. We need to be proud of our part in the change, but we need to understand what that change is and the fact that some change does not come about simply because we make new laws or we set up associations or draw up programs. We know It's a long process. We need to be realistic. It takes years and years for change to come about. But it is certain that the later we begin, the later the results will come. If we want better results for the next generation, we need to continue to work today, even if it is for others to reap the benefits of our work. We'd like to see results earlier. I have some doubts that they will, namely when it comes to changes in behavior. That's what studies tell us. Studies tell us that things don't happen overnight in 1 or 2 years, but I'm sure that there are many in this room who work more closely on these matters and know that when they look back 20, 30 years, objective changes have occurred, and a lot of people should be really proud of having contributed to this change. I think that there are aspects that derive from supervision of the law, enforcement of the law, improving the law. I think we are all co-responsible for consensus, but there are other aspects that cannot be changed by decree or decree law. I think we need to be realistic. The Parliament has a role to play, of course it does. As has been said, it needs to disseminate, it needs to talk. MPs need to talk about this in this House, in the committees, in the main chamber, in other areas. Let me also say, Bernardo raised a number of interesting issues, but I very often see discrimination vis-a-vis patients in advanced stages of their illness, whether it be AIDS or other diseases. And if there is positive differentiation when it comes to what is acceptable for someone with advanced cancer or patients with advanced stage AIDS, when it comes to palliative care, let me just say, in a realistic fashion now, that there are many people without AIDS or cancer that are the objects of discrimination at end of life. I work with people where discrimination is a serious problem. Of course, we don't want to focus only on that, but we can't forget those very important cases of discrimination as well. In serious patients at end of life care, very often there is a lack of access to care. Sometimes we talk about simple things like access to dentist appointments or family planning appointments. These MPs and parliaments, of course, need to alert. The institutions to the fact that these cases occur. Very often there's fear to speak about certain cases. There is prejudice. People don't want to say that something exists because it is a sign of lack of success. And so people don't talk about these, but I would be amiss not to refer to these cases here today. There's discrimination there too. Why? Well, because people don't know their rights, because health professionals need also to be trained and informed, and because we're all co-responsible if we are to change behaviors. And in order to change behavior, there needs to be information. So an effort, continued effort, has to be made to obtain information, to disseminate information, to find the institutions that are responsible for all of these matters. Change doesn't occur because it is decreed. Legislation is part and parcel of the tools for change, but I think change comes about if people are changed, and that means resilience on the parts of all. Everybody needs to persist and persist some more, even though sometimes results don't seem to come about as quickly as we'd like to. I think that, without being triumphalist, we can't think that we've done everything, but we need to celebrate past triumphs also. In full awareness, there's more to come. Thank you. And I'll give the floor to Carla Cruz from the Communist Party. I was looking at your site, the PCP site, Portuguese Communist Party site, looking for information on these matters. I found a number of questions you raised that you put to the government, one June 2013, focusing on news at the time about the fact that certain National Health Service hospitals using monies for HIV AIDS patients to pay water and electricity bills. It looks like that pathology is now part and parcel of the overall budget of hospitals. Now, did you get a reply from the government on this? And do you think that this is, this crisis is making the situation for patients worse? And if so, how? Well, let me quickly answer your question. But before I do so, on behalf of the Parliamentary Group of the Communist Party, allow me to thank you for this initiative. It's a very important one. The Portuguese Parliament and the Health Committee have been very involved in these matters over time. The problem of HIV/AIDS is of great concern to us. I believe that it's important for us to be here today at this conference. As to the questions you raise, yes, we have monitored closely all that has happened. António Diniz, Professor António Diniz, is here with us today, and he knows full well that we have done this good monitoring work because that is part and parcel of the role of MPs. We need to make sure that there is real application of the law and of the policies drawn up. So we did raise that question, among others, and that particular question cannot be dissociated from the policies that we've had over the last few years, policies that we have to say have had to do with subfunding of the National Health Service. The subfunding of the National Health Service has meant that hospitals find it difficult to meet the requirements when it comes to medicines. It's very hard for patients to have access to some medication. So when we realize that there are obstacles like this, we're not respecting the law. If we make access to medication and treatment difficult, if we prevent it, and this is what we've seen from the information we have received, medication required for long periods of time, as we heard from the director of the program, are now meted out more sparingly. This is the reality in our hospitals right now, and that means that the law has not been respected. So from that point of view, the parliamentary group has been supervising matters. We have good laws. We have laws that prevent discrimination, but then in practice, what we see is non-compliance. What we see is a lack of a correct, concrete application of the legislation. What we see is that the lack of efficacy or effectiveness of the law has to do with lax enforcement. We often think that laws don't change, but they can and should be improved on. In this case, does it need to be improved? Well, that's what I was going to say next. I think that of the issues raised, there are some that other MPs have already referred to, namely a change in policies that allow patients and professionals, all people in fact, all citizens, to be informed about the law, they respect the law as well, is of the essence. So we need to do work when it comes to dissemination, implementation of the law, but there are other analogous issues that need to be focused on. Maybe regulating the law, when you say that the National Rehabilitation Institute's report is not transparent enough or conclusive enough or is too vague, of course, this doesn't mean we need to change or amend the law, but rather that we need to regulate the mechanisms that exist. When it comes to the law itself, I confess that we only began to think about that particular issue just before coming into the session, but we will be analyzing the issue in greater detail. In conclusion, please, I know you're telling me to come to an end, but I think we need to respect the law And if we do so, the country will be an improved country. People who respect the law and the constitution will have a better life. Thank you very much, Carla Cruz. And picking up on what you said and on the report, recalling the case of the cook that was raised a number of times today already. After that particular incident, the left bloc presented a proposal in 2008 that was rejected by the PS and the Socialists and the Social Democrats. It prohibited the discrimination of HIV and AIDS patients. They proposed a monitoring committee for people affected by discrimination to monitor those cases. Now, you think that the report of the INR, the INR report, requires greater attention by the committees?
Good afternoon. I'd like to greet everybody, and I would like to say that we greatly appreciate this initiative, bringing the issues of people in their day-to-day lives to light is very important, and so work that you carried out to in this study to help us to understand the issues, I congratulate you greatly on this. Now, the left bloc has already mentioned this fact, but supervising laws, MPs do have this role as well, and it's a constant role. We raise these issues regularly, the issues of discrimination in access to treatment, which is expensive within National Health Service. This is a constant concern for us. And we feel that in the field of discrimination, there's more work to be done. I know that we're in a rush here, but I want to make a keynote point and a few other issues, looking at the need of a change in legislation. I'm interested that you brought the crisis context into this discussion. When we look at the ILO report that's saying that an employed worker who has more than 40% more opportunity to gain treatment. It brings to mind the idea that austerity programs in health don't help our fight against discrimination. Also, we feel that in the discussion which has arisen, the difficulties in diagnosis, there's still a great fight ahead of us. The fight against discrimination, of course, has fallen into second place because of that difficulty. So we need to provide more training and education and more information. Now, this means training and informing healthcare professionals, media information to the general public, information at school. I heard people talking about training for citizenship and the lack of sex education really worried me, because it does seem that there's a sort of quite a complicit oversight that people don't bother about that in school, but it's absolutely essential. And this kind of work is decisive, and we have to work on that. Now, when it comes to the legal framework, this constant supervision has to be part of our agenda, and it takes various forms. We have many supervisory mechanisms, and I will end by saying that the assessment which is carried out to the needs to change the law is in fact well focused. We need to consider this, not just the report which was drawn up by the National Rehabilitation Institute. We have to move towards anti-discrimination. We have to look at discrimination in the social and family environment. strengthening monitoring of the law itself. And unlike some of my colleagues have said so far, I think that we do need to take a new look at the punishment regime and the commitment of the public services and the lack of any action when discrimination is reported. So there's one more issue. This report should have a different profile, and it should be more consistently assessed, in addition to altering the legal framework to deal with some specific issues over which we will not let our hands drop. And thank you very much for allowing me to speak a little bit. Thank you very much for that, and thank you to everybody else, to all the others who spoke on this subject. And now we're going to open the floor to the public. I know that some people have questions for members of parliament. Please, if you have a direct question, please identify who you want to ask the question of and who you are, please.
My question is for Isabel Neto. My area of concern is the discrimination of people with HIV, but in your professional role, it appears that you know of other cases of discrimination to do with access to the law, so let's respect the law. Did you report those cases? I'm just provoking a little. Would you like to add anything? I would like to say that in a particular case, because very often the problem is that the discrimination is tacit, it's not done out in the open, it's veiled. The people are told there aren't places in the service, that they have a certain topology to respect, that the hospital is not the most indicated place, it's not the best place for them, and so they skirt around the issue. I can think of at least two cases like this. Unfortunately, it's not something. Fortunately, it's not something that happens that frequently. But whatever the case, we need to deal with these serious issues. What we need to do in these cases is talk to people and try and understand why there isn't a report. What we need to do, obviously, is to look back and try and identify exactly what happened. A question up at the top. I'll give you the floor in a second after we hear the question. Good afternoon. I'm Paula Policarpo. I'm a legal expert at Abraço. I've worked with them for around 15 years. I'm sure Pedro Marques knows, but I can't remember exactly how many years. I have given them legal support for many years. And so I apply the law. I interpret the law, as it were, the law that you, the MPs, draw up. We interpret to try and resolve the problems that arise. There are a number of questions to do with the legislation in existence pertaining to the issues raised by people who come to the association. But the legal framework in Portugal has, at the top, the Constitution of the Portuguese Republic. I think only that Article 13 alone, jurisprudence, case law, doctrine, are part and parcel of law in Portugal. So Article 13 actually covers all the cases we've talked about here today. I'm in agreement with Pedro Silveira Marques' proposals when it comes to amending or improving Law 46/2006. And I would add something further. I think we need to regulate the administrative penalty regime, which goes hand in hand with the law. In other words, we need fines. So the labor authority should have these penalties it can apply, fines, and not so much so in the social family sphere. There we can add everything that Pedro Silveira Marques says. It will improve the law, but the existing legislation, the criminal law, The constitutional references are more than enough to reach the same end. But there is something that you can think about, which is this issue of administrative offences or fines. Fines help educate. Education takes time, generations sometimes even. It's not in 4 years that we're going to enable people to act and better apply the law, but sanctions do help. And so I would challenge you with a view to setting up a system of fines for banking authorities or banks and insurance companies that break the law. Also, if I may, the lack of reporting to the National Rehabilitation Institute, on our side at least, has to do with the following. Very often the legal cases are dealt with directly with the employer because people themselves do not want us to report these cases because they would have to have a formal complaint drawn up. I would draw those up. Ricard Batiste the late would then receive those, or the ombudsman, but people don't want that. So what we do is internally, together with the employer, resolve the issue. Very often at the heart of the legal problem is ignorance. And the law, of course, doesn't resolve everything. In our labor legislation, for example, labor contracts are short-term contracts today. So you can terminate a contract 15 days, 30 days prior notice. But in an employer today obviously doesn't fire people because they have HIV. In my experience, on a daily basis, no one fires anyone because they have HIV. People think that's why they have been fired, because as Pedro Silveira said today, very often the employer knows that someone has HIV because the doctors in their company have told them the test results. Very often people don't even know that the employer knows, and then very often they think they've been fired because of that, but it isn't actually a proof, it isn't actually evidence. You don't need a justification if it's a short-term contract. So there are other issues often involved. What we need to see is this law and others being applied and enforced. I think it would be useful very quickly also to think about a body, an authority, an institution, an observatory that might know about all discriminatory cases for HIV and other areas. We do have SEAT and others, we've heard about those, but we need an umbrella structure that we could report all discrimination cases to, whether it be HIV cases or others. Thank you very much for your contribution. Before I give the floor to the MPs who would like to respond to that, Pedro Silveira Marx just wants to make a correction, I believe. Paul, I'm sorry, but the administrative offences you talk about, the fines, are in the law. They exist already. What isn't there, and I think that's what you didn't understand, what isn't in the law is a sanction regime. A sanction regime for bodies that do not meet their requirements when the procedure is underway. The fines are already laid down, provided for in the law. That's not required. We've lost the mic feed. So, clarification by Pedro Silveira Marques. Elsa Paes, you wanted to add something on what you just heard? Yes, thank you for that comment. Paula said something that was very important right at the end there, something I totally identify with. We don't have a mechanism for all types of discrimination. We have different mechanisms for different areas of discrimination, so labor discrimination, for disability, which would include the discrimination of people with HIV/AIDS, but we don't have a mechanism. Well, we do have the Ombudsman's Office, but that's not a mechanism that allows for sanctions to be applied. So I think that maybe at the end of this long journey, we have one more path to go down, as is happening in other countries. We need to improve our punishment mechanisms. It's not enough to identify the sanctions. We need to do, sorry, corrects the speaker, it's not enough to identify the stigma and the prejudice and the discrimination. We need to then combat all of that in some way. The mechanisms we have are sanctions, for example, for discrimination in the workplace. We don't have a mechanism for social discrimination or sanctions for what appears in our advertising. So another path to tread. Of course, we wouldn't be able to go down that further path if we hadn't made this journey, the journey we made up until now. But we do need mechanisms that might punish those that are in breach of the application of these rights. One further comment before we hear another question. Is it a question? Very good afternoon to you all, especially to those I had not yet greeted. Good afternoon. I was going to say a number of things, but I'm going to now stick to what I think is essential to say. I think all legislation can be amended and improved over time. So I'm pleased to hear proposals with a view to doing just that. I think we should analyze it, and I think it is apparent the program would be more than happy, if you so wish, for us to collaborate in improving the existing legislation. And why? Well, what is of greatest importance to me is the application being made. Let me give you an example, which I will then tie in with something that MP Carla Cruz raised. As you know, ARV medication administration was talked about a lot last year. There were complaints by individual citizens, complaints from NGOs, so there was a survey in our hospitals to try and understand exactly what was going on. And based on the report that the program then drew up, the Secretary of State, the Deputy Secretary of State for Health, drew up a document that civil society considered a significant step forward. That document said something along the lines of, if I don't have any more time, I shall shut up. You have less than 2 minutes. There are other questions. Well, these are just, they said that only in exceptional situations could it be made available for less than, for more than 30 days. But for less than 30 days, it could be made available, and explain the procedures. What happened after this document was made public? Well, some hospitals misread the document. Previously, they made it available for 2 months, made medication available for 2 months. Now, they were providing medication only for 30 days. So they refused to read in between the lines. A further study is now being carried out, and I believe we will have to improve on that text, making it even more explicit. Or else, the issue of access to medication, universality, quality, equity, are touchstones. They're also a form of combating discrimination. This is just an example of how we need to cooperate with a view to improving matters. And that is all. I will say nothing further. Well then, Três Anjinho, please be succinct. We have to conclude before 6:30. We have 6 minutes to go, and I want to make one last round of the table.
Thank you very much that you give me the floor. The subjects which have been dealt with here are fascinating. The issues, I worked in the committee's first work on anti-discrimination equality, and this issue of discrimination regarding HIV is something which you've provoked me to think. Now, you've mentioned monitoring, responsibility, and raising awareness. Obviously, we have to think about the work of the National Rehabilitation Institute, and the law gives that institute a number of different responsibilities when it comes to discrimination. I fully agree with you that we have to clarify the law and harmonize our concepts, because we have to do that to be able to carry out good monitoring. Then we have to clarify procedures, especially when it comes to identifying misdemeanors. When it comes to labour authority, how to implement certain punishments, and to keep all of that on the agenda. And the implementation of accessory punishments, and this all has to be published on the labour authority's site. Now, this was applied when it came to women, discriminating against women, because this kind of information wasn't being provided. And so you have to advertise these issues in order to raise awareness. Then it comes to people need to be aware of the work of the National Rehabilitation Institute, the INR. I don't know how many of you have actually gone to their website, because it's not a user-friendly website. If you want to find anything, you're going to find it difficult. Now, I was looking for the PowerPoints which were shown here, and I wanted to know whether they were published on that website. According to law, they have to be. I couldn't find the report. I challenge anybody to try and find the information I was looking for, because I couldn't find it anywhere. A speaker is speaking without microphone. It's important. It's important for me to say this, that I've got a reasonably high level of education, and I couldn't find anything on the site. Now, we don't also we shouldn't also just base ourselves on laws, but on information for operators, for society in general, and then of course in education. And this synergy between the three will enable us to provide monitoring raising awareness. This idea of having an observatory within the European Union, there is discussion going on about whether there should be a non-discrimination and equality law. And this should give us pause for thought, because we have at the moment various categories which are called suspicion categories. This framework law would in fact provide a single body which would be responsible for equality and non-discrimination. It could be I could be for and against that. There are some categories which are more liable to be discriminated against than others, and this could be and perhaps they might dominate those which don't have such a high profile. But it may also raise the question as an advantage of multiple discrimination, which has been mentioned here. When you're looking at the elements of discrimination, there are gaps. You might say that a woman is discriminated against not because she's a woman or because she has a certain level of health, but because she is a woman and she has a certain level of health. And so I think that combination of elements is something we ought to concern ourselves with. I'm sorry that we don't have any time for more questions, because in exactly 2 minutes, we will begin our next panel. We're going to listen to civil society about this. And so perhaps we'll leave it to them to deal with these issues. Once again, a speaker is speaking without a microphone. The National Health Inspectorate, when it receives any notification of an illness or by decree or whatever it is, that institute must be in a position to support sufferers. It's and that's an important fact which I thought had to be raised both for this illness and for any other illness. Right. So that's a guarantee from the National Health Inspectorate. Now we have 30 seconds for each MP to end this debate, and that will be it. Well, 30 seconds. Let's think about punishments of financial institutes, insurers. We have to look at this issue. There are real complaints in this field. We have to identify discrimination, which is not just a subterfuge of these bodies to get around the law. And I'm very interested to look at this issue of a simplex of discriminations. We have to go into that further with regard to the proposal to improve the Rehabilitation Institute's website. Well, yes, we do have to take that into account. And the idea of multiple discrimination also has to be dealt with. The commission, the health commission, and the HIV working group also has to look at that. The ethics group, they all have to work together so that Parliament can take an overview of the whole situation. Very quickly, access to rights when it comes to treatment. People who are infected have to have access to treatment. The minister has been saying that treatment has been increasing for people with HIV/AIDS, but we know from the latest news that people who want access to treatment, supposedly they should have access to that, but because of the crisis, they don't have access to the medicines they need. So we have to bear these issues in mind so that access is facilitated. Because when the medicines exist, prevention, that's central. I would like to focus on the law. It's the sex education law, published in 2009. It is a law which is very important, and we should oversee how it's being implemented, because without access to sex education, subsequently, when young people grow up, they will find it harder to claim their other rights based on this essential information. That was your 30 seconds, so now we have to move on. Simply, we won't have time to follow on. So, our next speaker, I'd like to thank the organisers once again. I like pragmatism, and within the Portuguese Parliament, focusing on two or three very realistic priorities which can be carried out immediately when it comes to changing the law, and then within Parliament, but looking outward, maintain this on the agenda, keep talking about it, and keep hammering away at this issue. Now, Carla Cruz, you have the floor. I share the opinion Paula expressed, which is to comply with Article 13 of the Portuguese Constitution. If that's complied with, we won't have discrimination. It's essential. Complying with the Portuguese Constitution and with the laws laws, of course, are never finished. They always have to be improved, but those improvements have to be looked at closely, worked on, and there's no point in changing the law just for its own sake. We have to really consider those changes, obviously to ensure that there is no discrimination, because we are talking about human rights issues. And it's important that human rights are respected. Here in Portugal today, human rights issues are really being endangered. And last but not least, Cecilia Honório, as regards discrimination in our time. 30 seconds, like everybody else. With the concerns which you all share here today, irrespective of the parties which we belong to, I didn't want to allow these 30 seconds to pass without reminding you that the cuts in the National Health Service and policies which encourage unemployment are result in discrimination. There's a concern for sex education in school. When it comes to assessment and law, we have to be prepared to improve things by assessing this, and I think that this has been taken on board by everybody, especially via the punishment regime, which I think is very important. Thank you very much to MPs from all parliamentary groups who were here. And unfortunately, Eloisa Apolloni from the Green Party was the only one who was unable to be here for health reasons. She's only slightly ill, nothing serious. But thank you very much for all of the attention which you've paid to this panel. And I think that that's actually has clarified quite a few issues for us. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, MPs, let's begin this final panel moderated by me. I was told in no uncertain terms by the organizers that I have to be really strict. I have a heart of gold, so I can't really mix iron and steel with gold, but I will appeal to those who are going to speak to please be succinct, stick to the time allotted. We will hear from Luiz Mendão. Only the others will be here to respond as ombudsman, responsible for ensuring human rights are respected. I'm very pleased to be here so that we can discuss these problems pertaining to HIV/AIDS. Without further ado, or else I will be disrespecting my own rules, I will give the floor to Luiz Mendão. Say what you will in full freedom, no limitation. Thank you very much. I have already spoken on a number of occasions throughout the day. In addition to the fact that I have AIDS, I'm very pleased to see that the new title is HIV and AIDS. There is HIV without AIDS, but no AIDS without HIV. My diagnosis came too late. I'm a citizen. I try to respect my duties as a citizen. I have to say that in the civilizations I most appreciate, the rule of law is one of the great conquests of civilization. And so I believe that the quality of the law, the quality of the exercise of rights defines the quality of the civilization we inhabit. Because I am getting along in age, I know that we often feel when we are young that the world will only improve, but it doesn't always change for the better. Very often it changes for the worst, and so we need to be careful. This current moment of difficulty for Portugal, but not only Portugal, large parts of Europe and other countries around the world, in these times of difficulty, populist phenomena, demagogics, racism, homophobia, transphobia, all other phobias you can think of, may emerge again. And treatment is expensive. In our society, if we haven't worked well, voices will emerge questioning people's rights to treatment. Following on from these introductory words, let me just say that I think this was a productive day's work. I believe we have been doing good work in this area. I think we have a lot of material to work on. Now, I think that the information collected, which we began analyzing today, shows us that there are problems we can resolve. However, we need to partner up in order to do so. And these problems, we talked about stigma and discrimination in Portugal all day. We talked about stigma in health services and education. We talked about stigma and discrimination in the labor place, or the workplace. And all of these contexts show us that there is more stigma and discrimination than that which we believe exists, than those we believe exist. We talked also about testing, diagnosis, and treatment, and I need to remind you, I often remind people of this because I think people often just don't know, that in a country in the EU, we still have a country with an epidemic such as the one we have. Estonia has a very specific situation in the Russian minority. There it's the Russians who feel discriminated against, but that's a special case. In terms of the HIV epidemic context, Portugal has the most serious of situations. Portugal is one of the countries, and I think we should also think about that, where very few people live publicly with the infection. These are older, ill, independent people. You need to be able to publicly make it known. I wouldn't advise anyone to disclose that they are HIV positive. The only other thing I'd like to say, the only thing I'd like to add to this, is that there are many organizations working together, many of whom are not here today. We often do more than we really should. We know that financially times are hard, but we've heard a lot of declarations here today that we will hold people accountable for. So we've taken note of things that were said here today, and we will make sure that these declarations are made good on. A few years ago, we talked about the role of the parliamentary group on HIV/AIDS, and it took some six years, but we were stubborn. We stuck to our guns. Sometimes things go slowly, but we eventually got our committee. Well, what do I mean when I say all of this? Well, we're not going to produce a declaration. We think it's early days yet for this to be done. So instead of having a general declaration of principles that is poor in content and concrete proposals, although I do understand what Pedro Silvério Marques defended with a view to amending and improving our legislation, I think what we really need to do, though, now is to together analyze the documents and in 10, 15 days' time come up with a proper declaration with proper content so that we can all think about these matters, think about the proposals made by society. Something else I'd like to add, based on what we heard at this conference, is that there is a need to learn to work together, a need to learn to work based on different types of knowledge, and learn to schedule priorities that will allow us to choose the amendments of greatest importance, those most effective in resolving some of the problems we face. However, I think that based on what we heard here today, based on the debates had throughout the day, as Pedro Silvério Marques said, a lot of this was prepared by a set of people that had never even met. One of the proposals initially was how to find 20 people to become interviewers in hospitals, people with HIV/AIDS. I know many of the people who interviewed others. For some of them, this was one of the most important events in their lifetimes. For some of them, they were going to be talking to someone that telling them that they had HIV/AIDS for the first time. We'll be happy to debate these matters in the future, should there be a debate, and I think we can conclude that a more global approach to discrimination and the legal regimes to control, I'm not even going to say eradicate, discrimination need to be more wide-ranging and need to be shared. In the case of multiple discrimination, I have to say that HIV can be an example. HIV affects ethnic minorities, it affects undocumented migrants, it affects sexual minorities, it affects drug users. And because this is my battle horse and has been for many years, and as together with Pedro Faria Costa, we're trying to organize a conference on health and drugs, I believe that we need to continue to apply pressure to improve responses, evidence-based responses, responses based on human rights. We've never had a campaign that has said that drug users are people like everybody else. We've had campaigns for many discrimination factors, but we've never had campaigns for drug users. So let me end on this. We have work to do together. We will be producing a declaration with proper content in a few days' time. We, I believe, will continue to work and do so with a view to continuing on the right path. I think that our work here together has enriched the debate, has enriched us all. And I must also add that although very often I'd like to just go back to my mountain, Arabida, there's a little home waiting for me when I retire, I still believe that part of the work, at least, that we do makes sense, is still necessary, has less effect and impact than we'd like, but does have some impact. And so we soldier on and postpone retirement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if I have time to really raise one or two points. I don't know if anybody here wants to make any statement here on the panel. Apparently not. Just two or three quick observations. Firstly, to underline this good sense with which Luis Mendal always approaches these issues. It's sensible and wise. And I think we ought to look at things in this way, because these are issues which have a number of different causes. When we pay the slightest attention to social phenomena, and especially these ones, which are on the edge of existence, they often contain many different factors, and we often forget that. We think that things only have one factor, one vector, one issue. Also, the good sense and wisdom with which Luis Mendal constructs the old maxim that we are always moving to try to move on to a greater work, but we're always moving forwards, backwards, there are disruptions, etc. And that was really well highlighted by Luz Mendal. When it comes to the ombudsman, an ombudsman is a fully independent the body of the state, which has its democratic legitimacy here in the Portuguese Parliament, but is fully independent. And very often this means that the ombudsman is turned to solve all of the ills of existence, but that's not what the ombudsman is. He has the power of persuasion, of recommendation, dissuasion, but that's how it should be. He should not have a coercive power. He should use the elements which I've just mentioned in order to make his point with regard this issue. Now, this is my last point. With very good sense and with wisdom, Luz Mendal focused on the Portuguese exception, if you like. We like to make great statements and then we don't live up to them. And very sensibly and intelligently, Luz Mendal didn't make a declaration. He is going to focus on the singular nature of this, the bringing people together, and so that he can make much stronger points. Once again, good sense and great knowledge of a great understanding of our soul, because our soul often brings us to the idea that either through words or through the law we can change the world. And if things change, and especially when we're here in this house of democracy, the law is an essential element, or the power of the law. But the power is all very good, but it doesn't change the world. And we believe in Portugal that through words, through whether spoken or written words, we can change the world. But that's not the case. You need dedication, tenacity, strength, dedication, consistency, which is another of the virtue which is often lacking in us. Determination, dedication. Well, we failed this time, so we get back on the horse, we do it again. We failed a second time, now we get back and we do it again with determination. And here we have somebody who represents that determination, that dedication, that consistency. And it's with that sense that we've learnt so much today. And you can be sure that the ombudsman would do everything which has been my commitment ever since I took the post. We'll do everything in our power to take things forward in this domain. Thank you very much. Without going on any further, I close this very, very short panel. Thank you very much. Good evening to everybody. Now, we are now at the closing session for a conference which began at 9:30 this morning. So congratulations and thanks for your resilience and stamina for a discussion which has been very heartfelt. And so I'd like to thank both the Secretary of State for being here and also Alice from the ILO, who has already spoken in the one of the previous panel and is in fact going to speak to us again here at this closing panel to look at stigmatization in the workplace and such an important issue which we've heard throughout this conference. I'm not going to waste your time with too many words. I'm going to thank the Secretary of State for being here because very early in his ministerial career, he tried to make sure that everybody infected by HIV/AIDS would be incorporated within the National Health Service, so you could ensure that people had early diagnosis, because there were too many people in Portugal where people were infected and they didn't know that they had the infection. They are, in fact, were being detected too late, and so this had knock-on effects on their health. Now, he's also been ombudsman, as the ombudsman has already said, Portugal has certain issues when it comes to the HIV issue, and they require very special and specific approaches when it comes to HIV infection, where discrimination and stigma involves a multiple stigmatization because it is incorporated with gender issues, because drug users, homosexual men, prisoners and non-documented immigrants from ethnic minorities, etc. And so despite we have legislation which is seen as being globally very advanced according to international organizations, but nevertheless it needs to be backed up by oversight, and that involves civil society, NGOs, the Portuguese Parliament, the government itself. All of us have to be involved in providing a generator to be able to ensure the reduction and elimination of discrimination and stigma. And so I would now like to once again invite the director for the HIV program of the International Labour Organization, Alice Wedrogo, to be with us and to take her final words.
Muitíssimo obrigado, Ricardo. Realmente é um grande prazer para a OIT estar presente e a poder juntar-se a esta cerimónia de encerramento. Devo dizer-vos que o dia foi produtivo, interessante, com excelentes novas ideias. E gostaria, por conseguinte, de agradecer os organizadores, dando-lhes os parabéns, inclusive, porque é preciso muita coragem para organizar uma reunião deste tipo com uma discussão tão aberta e transparente, cândida. E penso que essa é a única forma de podermos avançar em questões como estas, e nomeadamente quando falamos em estigma e discriminação no âmbito do VIH e da SIDA, algo que é fundamental, que tem de ser documentado e falado. E também parabéns àqueles que iniciaram este relatório, porque conforme disso, isso deu muitas informações sobre a situação. São relatórios que fazemos e encorajamos ao nível da OIT, porque somos uma organização que tem uma grande base e abrangência. Também temos uma grande responsabilidade. É um grande prazer que Portugal, entre outros países, tenha aderido e participado na forma como se pode medir, manifestar o estigma e a discriminação, para vermos tudo aquilo que podemos fazer em conjunto e podermos abraçar esta causa. O estigma e a discriminação em relação ao VIH e a SIDA é fundamental para podermos chegar aos três zeros: zero infecções, zero mortes, zero discriminação. O dia já vai longo, muito foi dito, apenas gostaria de acrescentar que a OIT está muitíssimo interessada naquilo que foi aqui iniciado hoje e queremos participar na sequência, e também contamos com todos os parceiros aqui presentes nesta sala. Muito obrigado a todos.
Right from the start, let me thank all of those who work at the Assemblée de la République, at this Parliament. They were all very dedicated. Let me extend my heartfelt thanks to you too. Round of applause. And now I will give the floor to His Excellency the Minister of Health, Balmaseda. MPs, Director of the HIV program at the ILO. International coordinator and executive director of the Global Network of People Living with HIV, organizers of this conference, NGO heads, director of the priority program of the DG for Health and AIDS and tuberculosis. After a very busy day, as I was told, let me congratulate you for this conference, and I congratulate you for three reasons. Firstly, because results were presented on the stigma index for Portugal. It's important that Portugal be among the countries that have already produced this report. That's already around 50. So that we can make this information available to the national programs on HIV/AIDS, so that we can improve them and help prevent infection and also improve diagnosis and treatment. Also important was the fact that this program was carried out by important associations such as the Global Network of People Living with HIV, the International Community of Women Living with AIDS, the Planned Parenthood Federation, the joint UN program on AIDS, and also the fact that partnership was possible, as Ricardo Batista late pointed out, partnership in this parliament. All parliamentary groups have been represented throughout the day, or international and national organizations, ministries for health, employment, social solidarity, the ombudsman who has just been speaking to you, people from the workplace, representatives of civil society organizations. So this has been an open space for dialogue, showing that it is possible for people to cooperate with a view to attaining common objectives. One of the ways in which to do this is to participate in critical debate, as was done today, but focusing on clear and precise data. The conclusions presented are going to be a working document to reflect on carefully. Thirdly, and finally, the objectives of this meeting will be applicable to all the aims laid down by the program to combat HIV/AIDS, the DG for Health. We need to cover diagnosis, treatment and make sure that people remain in the health system. We need to put an end to stigma and discrimination. This will mean an improvement in terms of ethics, but also an improvement in combating infection rates. The work will continue after today. The effects of this conference, however, will be long-lasting. Tomorrow, when we go back to work, we will be better able to make sure that the objectives we talked about today are attained. We will need to look in depth at the results of this conference, which represent great advances in terms of the debate on the issues being discussed. We look forward to the results produced. You will continue to have our support in defining causes, defining strategies, implementing the praxis that will help put an end to stigma and discrimination of people living with HIV/AIDS. And two final notes, if I may. As you saw in the report presented on Friday by the program coordinator, we have more patients who have been treated. We have a lower mortality rate. We have fewer new cases of AIDS, but we are still far from achieving the objectives of zero infections, zero discrimination, and zero deaths. So we need to continue to look at these two things in tandem. There are some signs of success, as the results show. But on the other hand, we need to note the significant prevalence. And I was able to say a few words to the ombudsman as I was coming into the room. AIDS has been focused on in Portugal for many years. So this fight has been a long-lasting one. It didn't begin 3 years ago, it didn't begin 5 years ago. And so we have talked about these matters at length. I was able to discuss them with the coordinator. And what we have seen is that although systematic work has been done, the results tarry. And we don't have the results we've seen in other areas where society has begun to work together and better results have been achieved. So we need to reflect on these matters. That's why this meeting is so important. I'm not just saying this because it sounds right. It is true that we need to understand how to improve the results. We need to make greater efforts, but there have been great efforts made. People have paid attention to the topic. There has been a good fight. There has been dissemination. So the fact of the matter is that we need to understand how to improve on the efforts made over so many years. We need to help improve the results, make them even more positive than these we have just seen. This conference is extraordinary, I would say. Secondly, the results of the study, tying this in with this issue of the relationship between the three UN objectives, zero infections, zero new cases, zero of discrimination, and zero deaths from AIDS. I'd say that of the three, there is a correlation, but discrimination is the one that some might focus on less. If we understand, however, that we're talking about thousands of people with AIDS who have not been diagnosed, who are not in our national health system, then we are sure of one thing. Some of them are not in the system because they are fearful of discrimination. So whatever we do in this field, it will be a decisive contribution to achieving the other objectives of zero new cases and zero deaths. So this conference is of great interest. Everything that was debated was of extreme importance in order for us to be able to lower prevalence. And we need to make sure that these people are treated within the national health system because it is a system able to take care of them. It has excellent specialists. Thank you very much for the hard work.
Thank you very much, and so I hereby adjourn this seminar. Thank you very much and good night.